Hello, my name is Evan Mann, and I'm talking today, Thursday the 27th of August 2015, with Terry Ross. We're meeting at the Curtin premises of the Canberra and District Historical Society as part of the Curtin Living Memories Project. Terry has a long association with the local Catholic parish here in Curtin and with the Catholic school, the Holy Trinity Primary School. The parish celebrated its 50th anniversary earlier this year, and the school will be celebrating its 50th next year. Now, it's about Terry's association with the school that we'll be mainly talking about here today. That involvement has been at various levels, as a parent and a grandparent of children at the school, as a very active member of the Parents and Friends Association over many years, and for the past 15 years as janitor at the school. So, Terry, it's a great pleasure to meet you here today, and it's great that you could come. I understand this year is also a 50th anniversary for you because you moved into your current house in Lyons, I think, about 50 years ago.
Yes, yes. I'm just trying to recall. It was Easter 1964, so it's...
Oh, 51. Yes, yeah, yes. Okay. And what brought you and your wife to this part of the world?
Well, I started off... When I left school, I joined Peter's Ice Cream in Sydney and I was studying to be an industrial chemist, and I got very ill with some sort of meningitis or polio. They were not sure. And that was after about 3 years working there. And then after that, the next year I got hepatitis A, and I decided that working in a food factory wasn't for me, and I applied for a job with the scientific services of the Snowy Mountains Authority. And I worked there for 3 or 4 years, and I had a sister and a husband in Canberra, and I came to Canberra quite often and got to like the place and love the place in a sense. The four seasons were good for me, you know, the winter and the summer. So when I went back to Sydney, I had it in mind to come to Canberra, and I joined the Bureau of Statistics, which was recruiting people to come to Canberra at that time, and I came down in November 1963, the day I was on the train, the time JFK was killed.
Remember it well.
Mm. Yes, and I was my wife. I heard the news on the cab as I went over the old Commonwealth, well, the new Commonwealth Avenue bridge just before the lake was filled. Mm. And then my wife rang me that night and told me, oh, not my wife, my fiance at that stage. And then we got married in, no, I was wrong with, you were right about that 50 years. I'm sorry, it was 65 when we moved into,
okay. Mm.
Because we were married in 1964, May 1964, and came straight to Canberra, and we lived over in Dixon before we bought our house in Lyons.
And you're still in the same house in Lyons?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I'm probably the oldest resident.
And pretty quickly you got associated with the local parish here.
Yes. Being a Catholic, I joined the church. You know, we're coming off to church. But at that stage, the church wasn't built, of course, and we had mass in the state school further up the road, and then when the school was built, that we had services there until the church was built. I didn't have a lot to do with building of the church, although I remember a number of occasions when we were putting the seats together. The church seats were all delivered in bits and pieces, and we were out the front of the where the foyer is, bolting them all together and putting them into place. And I remember one night very distinctly where it was pouring rain and there was electrical cords everywhere, and I wonder how we all survived.
One thing I remember when I spoke to you the other day about in preparation of this interview, that I was surprised about, is that you were an active member of the school Parents and Friends Association long before you had children at the school.
Well, about 5 years before, yeah. I, well, it was all a community then. And, you know, if you belonged to the church, you belonged to the school. It was, you know, I mean, it was a different situation to if I'd been in Sydney where, you know, the traditions were different. But here they were looking for people to belong. And so I got involved. I think a number of people were involved in that way, simply because we were raising money, and the parish at that stage was the raising the money for the school. Things changed later on, and we might talk about that a little bit later. But so it was the parish raising money for the school, and I got involved in the raising. What they did, we were raffling a car, and they had a hierarchical structure of people in which each person was allocated about 10 houses to supply them with tickets for the raffle, and you were responsible for trying to convince the people to sell them. Uh-huh. And they're all Catholics, of course, that we were delivering to, so it wasn't a problem. And then that went up to another a guy who looked after 10 or so agents, and then that went to the organisers. So this went on for a number of years. So that's how I got involved.
Okay.
And you know, so you're all part of the money raising for the school, although you didn't have children at the school at that stage.
Many of us won't be familiar with how Catholic schools a generation ago worked. Just tell us a bit about the school in the 60s and the 70s. I understand, for example, that all the teaching staff initially were nuns,
yes,
Sisters of Mercy.
I had a think about that, and I remember there was one woman that wasn't a nun.
All right.
She was she had kindergarten, that's right, but the rest were nuns there, and I remember she was a very dynamic woman, and I remember she had all these wintry things hanging from the ceiling, and Father Lynch came in one day and said, it's spring, Mrs. Rosa was her name, and she said, in front of the kids, you see, and she turned around to him and said, Father, it'll be spring when I say so. So, but other than that, they were all nuns, yes. She was a very, very lovely woman, actually.
Memories of any of the headmistresses?
Oh, yes. There was, Sister Bernadine was the first one, and I didn't have a lot to do with her. But there was, I was just trying to think of a name at the moment. But as a matter of fact, I spoke to her only 6 months ago. She came down to here to a function, and I'll think of it in a minute. But I remember we had a PNF meeting, and she said to me, I was the vice president, and the president, who was a rather difficult person to get money out of, was always giving us lectures on the economy, was away in hospital, and she said to me, we used to have four terms then, and she said to me, or to the committee actually, but you know, because the vice president, they tended to ask, would the committee, the PNF, pay the piano teacher $10, £10 actually, for the last two terms of the year? And I said that the committee sort of said, yeah, right, you know, it wasn't real formal at that stage. And I said to her, who paid for the first two terms? And she said, oh, I did, see. So I said to her, well, we'll pay for that as well. And when the president came back the next year, next meeting, he tried to rescind the motion, but of course, he couldn't. Mm. It was all legal, and so that was that. The situation was simply, I give that as a demonstration of how poor the schools were in those days. Mm. You know, they'd have to scrape and pay out of their own funds for things that we didn't know about at times.
Yes, well, these were the days before state aid, weren't they?
Yes.
And you're telling me about how the school obtained desks and furniture and carpets and things. Tell us a bit about that.
That was funny, that. Yeah. I'm sure the government used to have auctions of their furniture and whatnot, and once every 3 months or so. But before the actual stuff was put into lots, the charities were asked to come out and buy and give an offer to the guy running the show to purchase items such as desks, filing cabinets, office chairs and all sorts of things. So I used to go along with the principal, it was Margaret at that stage, and put a bid in for the various items. And we got them pretty cheap. It was absolutely, very cheap. The story sticks in my mind of she wanted to get some gym equipment. And when we got out there, there was two sets of parallel bars, the ones that you could move up and down and whatnot. And she said to me, "Oh, that'd be good." And I said to the guy, "How much for the parallel bars?" He said, "Oh." He said, "I don't know. You've never had parallel bars before," he said. I said, "Oh, well, how about £5? And he said, "Oh, okay." And Margaret said, "How much for the two?" I said, "That is the two." So we had all sorts of things there, and I remember attached to that we decided that we'd make a little bit of money on as well at one, and we bought 40 desks to sell to the public, see, and we wanted to get them from the auction back to the school because you had to get them out in 24 hours. And one of the guys at the school, he was down here at the wool shed, and he had a truck in which they used to cart sheep and all sorts of things. And we loaded up this thing with these 40 office desks and brought them and put them in the annex, and we sold them off. And in those days, of course, people wanted that sort of stuff. Now nobody wants it, but we made a fair bit of money that way.
And your orange and grey carpets, how do they
Well, there was the orange carpet that we got from Cusack's. That was when there was four of us, and we were negotiating to get carpets for the classrooms, and we kept on looking around for people, and we got a phone call, or one of us got a phone, I can't remember who it was, got a phone call about 8 o'clock at night from John Cusack, I think it was, saying that we had this orange carpet there, enough to cover all the classrooms, but we'd have to make a decision overnight.
And sounds very 70s, orange carpet.
Yes. So we had to come up and see the head nun, and this was about 10 o'clock at night by the time we got here. And we're knocking on the front door, and the nun came to the door of the dressing gown saying, "Well, what do you want?" And that's when we told her about the carpets, and I said, "Can we go ahead with it?" She said, "Yeah," well, we all asked. And that's when she referred to us as the four black crows sat out in the dark,
And this name stuck, did it?
Yes, quite a while. And then the grey carpet for the corridors, we got that from one of the chaps who had kids at the school. He was a Malaysian chap, very nice. He's still around the parish, I see him. He had a lot to do with, he was an architect in charge of maintenance of buildings, office buildings, and he supplied us a couple of times with grey carpet to put down the corridors, which we laid ourselves and did all right with it too. We learned a lot of trades.
You were also adept at raising money, of course, too. Tell us a bit about your fundraising activities.
Well, it was mainly, originally I was just one of these guys that used to deliver tickets to the the people in the around the parish in lines, and then I moved up into looking after a group of blokes, and you have to sort of make them enthusiastic about getting the tickets back on time and all that. And then, so over the years, and then I moved into looking after the whole parish school. At that stage, there was about five Catholic schools were involved, and I mean, two chaps started off, a bloke named Paul Rice and another John somebody, and I can't think of his name, and they were pretty high up in the public service, but they knew what they were doing. As a matter of fact, they were the guys that started the Southern Cross Club. And I remember the first raffle that I ever saw. We were in the school hall, and they were selling tickets in the school hall that night as well as what's gone on beforehand. And I remember they had one car, and then and the more tickets they sold, the more television sets they raffled. And you know, we've got two television sets to go, and then somebody said, "Oh, we've sold so many, they raffle them." So I learned from them that part of it, and I eventually was running the whole school, the five school raffles in the end, where we were selling. We had three cars on offer in those days, and we'd make about $100,000 a year for the schools. So I learned that way, but they're rather, you know.
But you also sold to the public then, didn't you? Like, it wasn't just the Catholic community.
Oh, yeah, well, see, these people before me seem to think that they should just, you know, keep within the bounds of, you know, and I thought, well, we're only sort of turning over our own money, you know. It's just, so I decided that to see if I could go to the streets, and because at that stage it hadn't been done, except there was, I remember Grace Brothers in Sydney used to have a car raffle, and they never went to the streets. It was just in their side their building. So anyways, and Commonwealth Motors was supplying the car, and was flying the big, we had three cars at that stage. No, we didn't. We had just had the one at that stage. We were still within the school. And I went to Commonwealth Motors they were in Braddon at that stage, and asked, could I have a car to sell to the streets? And they said, oh, well, we'll give it a go. And so I went in and I picked up this one-ton ute with a trailer on behind and this magnificent V8 car, which we weren't raffling. We were only raffling the A66. No, I remember it was red, and I said to a mate of mine, you've got to find a spot so I can get into the square down at the plaza. And I pulled up at the little church on the corner of Launceston and Melrose there, and waited for him to come back. He said, I think I found a spot. So I followed him in, and it was about 11 o'clock in the day, I remember, and we pulled the car up, and I put the bonnet up and the back up, and started selling tickets. Well, they come from all the office buildings. It just went berserk. We ran out of tickets in a short time, but luckily we had one of the parishioners, she worked at the bank down there. I think it was the New South Wales Bank at that stage, and she's ringing up people, bringing tickets from all over the place, and we really made a killing. What I did wasn't right. We were supposed to, at that stage, have a permit to sell in the streets, but we found that out later. And so it went from there, and it just progressed. And we were, in the end, there was just a huge amount of money being made. I mean, when I started off at the school, we were making, say, $3,500 to $4,000. By the time that I'd left the place, you know, each school was making much more than that. And
What about your steak sandwiches? That was the other angle you were telling.
Yes. Well, we have. Again, I wasn't the instigator of this. I was just one of the group, but we refined the process over time, and we used to go to the Canberra show and work there. We'd set it up on a Thursday night and work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and some of us would sleep over and sell. We used to handle about 6,000 steak sandwiches and about 4,000 hot dogs and drinks in the end. But when they first started off, it was pretty rough. But we organised things such as we had refrigerator trucks and stuff like that, and we became pretty good in the end. But the trouble was, the show. This went on for years, but then the show people decided they were bringing professionals in.
Mm.
We also had other things. We'd have dinners at the school, progressive dinners where we'd have a meal, a dessert, oh, sorry, entrees at one place, main course another, and desserts another, and the nuns' convent was the place where we usually had the main course because we could cook there and that was a good money raiser. We also had functions in the school hall where we'd roast a pig and a lamb and do things like that. You know, you start off at about 8 o'clock in the morning and spend all day turning the pig and having a few beers while you're doing it.
Okay, thank you. You and Gay have a family, and your children, I think it's Linda, Andrea and Matthew.
That's right. Yes.
They all attended the school.
Yes.
Did you continue on the PNF after the kids had left the school?
No, I was still continuing with the raffle.
Right, okay, yeah.
But not the PNF, so I'd have to come in to, give them a report. But no, I continued with the raffle for a fair while afterwards, but... So I gave it away then, and then really I came back in 2000. I kept in contact with the secretary of the school and probably did some of the things for her. You know, I was a good mates with the secretary of the school, always have been.
Yeah.
But...
let's jump to 15 years ago then, when all this time you'd been a public servant in the Bureau of Stats.
Yeah.
But then you decided you had enough and you changed course. Tell us about that.
Well, I was very ill towards the end of my thing, and there was a lot of redundancies going off, and I thought I'd always wanted to get off and run my own business, you see, which I never achieved. But with the first redundancies, I put my hand up, because a lot of people didn't want to put their hand up, but I could see there was a lot of advantages of this, and I wasn't granted the redundancy. I was I was very crook at that time. I was just finding out that I had diabetes, and which I've overcome fairly well, and I've come up pretty strong these days. But then when the second lot came along, I was 59 then, and I put my hand up again, and they said yes, because of my illnesses, I should go. And so then I spent a couple of years sort of doing nothing. I was absolutely... I did a bit of work with the Electoral Commission, knocking on doors with their stuff, and I did a little bit of physical work, but nothing really demanding or nothing really interesting. And then the secretary rang me one night and she said, "Do you reckon you could fill in at the school as the janitor?" She said that we've lost our janitor a while back, and the ladies of the parish, the parents have been doing the toilets and whatnot, but it's just unsatisfactory. And I said, "Oh, well, I'll give it a go for 3 months." And I came up and I did it, and and it just grew. On from there. I found that it was a good little niche. Yeah, I didn't need to run my own business. By the time the second redundancy's come around, a lot of the landscaping and all sorts of businesses had been taken up, so there wasn't much really left to do. So, but anyway, I found that it's tremendous to work with the kids. You know, they all say hello, and when it's your birthday, like tomorrow, I'll be wished happy birthday all day from, and particularly the younger ones. I think I told you the story about 4-year-olds at the Early Learning Centre. The Early Learning Centre was built about 5 years ago, and that was a new addition to the place. And yeah, they were always saying hello, Terry, and whatnot. And this day, I just had a haircut. I had my hair cut very short, and this young 4-year-old looks and said, "Love your haircut, Terry." I thought, and that sort of emphasises how they are with you. And you know, you see the kids grow up, go off to high school, and it's quite an interesting and educational place. Yeah.
So what do you do as janitor? What's the job?
When I first started, I was cleaning the toilets, I was vacuuming the school, and I was working I was getting paid for about 15 hours a week, and I was doing about 30, see, but and so I was working very hard, and but it's all right. I mean, I'd vacuum the classroom. Oh, the parents did the classrooms. They still do, actually. That's been attritioned for years. But I'd vacuum the corridors and the executive areas and things like that. Do repairs, the little repairs. Then the school, in the first say 5 years of it, the school wasn't that well off, and I was doing repairs and changing the fluorescent tubes and stuff like that. These days it's a little bit more done by the Catholic Education Office. And then about 5 years ago, this principal left, a new one came, and she took a lot of the duties off me without reducing my salary.
That sounds a good deal.
Yeah, well, it was, but this simply because they've introduced the Early Learning Centre, and I think, I'm not sure, that there may be some specification that they needed professional people in to do the toilets and things like that. So, so now mainly I do a little bit of maintenance, but mainly it's waste management. Making sure that all the stuff is recycled and whatnot. I also have to make sure that the bins are picked up on time, and I have to order supplies for, the toilet rolls and the paper towels and all the soaps and all that are delivered on time, and delivered, and I have to organise that. And so it's mainly that sort of maintenance. Now, although if a tap bursts in the middle of the day when a kid takes it off, I've got to fix that up. And if somebody sets fire, somebody tried to set fire to the school once, I had to distinguish get that.
You have you had children at the school, but you've also had grandchildren at the school.
Yes, I've had Bradley, who's now in year 10, Ethan, who's in at Marist, and Ethan's at Marist now, and I've got Naomi, who's in year 5 over here still, and I may have Toby, who's will be joining here in 2 years' time.
Okay, so you've had a connection with this school now for, going on 50 years.
Yeah.
Just want to reflect a bit about changes over the years, about how Holy Trinity now looks and compares with the school when you first came across it.
Well, first of all, I think the community spirit that we had has been diluted. It's, I mean, Mainly because I suppose mothers work more so now than before. But I mean, in the early, when I was there as a parent and a volunteer, it was, I'd say 50% of the parents at least were involved. And if you asked something to be done, it was done. Mm. You know, run the fete, make lemmingtons. That was another little thing that they used to do. They made lemmingtons, sold them before lemmingtons became a commercial business. The Sisters of Charity were very, how do I put it, not meek, but they weren't pushy like some of the other orders. I mean, I went to school with the St. Joseph orders, and they were very tough on getting people to do things. But so the parents, the community sort of was there all the time. It's not so much now. I mean, at the moment they're trying to get somebody to run the fete next year, and it's they've had to cut down on the tuck shop days because and they think, you know, it was only recently they nearly cut out. They have 3 days now. They were nearly going to cut out two of them, but it's today, for instance, there were three blokes running the tuck shop, so that's sort of been fixed up a bit. So and it gets better sometimes with a principal. That has a lot of effects. But basically the community now, I'd say, there's only about 25% at the most who get involved. I mean, I can walk over there any day and there's people who, I see people that wouldn't know me, and yet that basic 25% of the women and blokes would know me. But so that's the main one thing. The other thing, of course, is money. You know, it was grim days when we were there. You didn't have any spare cash at all, and we didn't have any of the facilities that the kids have got today. I mean, you always had to, if you wanted to get something done, you always had to fight to get money. But these days you get grants. I mean, there's two water tanks over there that have been given to them on grants. None of that existed then. So it was the parents sort of were heavily involved in all parts of the school, more so than now.
Well, you mentioned earlier in the interview, Terry, that you turn 79 tomorrow.
Yes.
Well, congratulations in advance.
Thank you.
Any plans for the future?
Well, if you'd have asked me that a week ago, I'd say no. But after my result, as I said, my health has improved dramatically in the last week. I've been blessed with tremendous health since I left the public service, to be quite frank. Well, yes, I plan to work at the school until end of next year. My wife's not well, so we're not going to travel anywhere. I mean, we might go down the coast or something like that, but I think basically I'll probably be there for another as long as I can.
That's great. Great to hear that. Yeah. We might stop it there, I think, Terry. Thank you for sharing with us your thoughts and your memories about your years at Holy Trinity, which, of course, is a very important institution in this suburb.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.